Of course, I have my own idea about the situation. I'm sure you have your own idea, like everybody does. But at the same time, like we're reporters, we're not activists. So I feel like this experience helped me to realize what's the difference between these two things.
Imagine you're a journalism student assigned to the breaking news desk at your school's publication, and a story with international implications breaks on your campus. What would you do? I'm Michael O'Connell. This is It's All Journalism. Francesca Maria Lorenzini is an Italian multimedia reporter and graduate student at Columbia University in New York City. She and fellow student journalist Edward Lopez have been covering the recent pro-Palestinian student protests, and she's here to tell us about that experience. Francesca, welcome to It's All Journalism.
Thank you so much, Michael.
So, we're reporting this a couple of days after police came in and, arrested a bunch of the demonstrators and cleared out the camp at the Morningside Heights campus. So let's actually go back to the beginning of this. How did you first find out about this story? And, what were your initial thoughts about how to cover it?
Well, actually, it was really particular because when I came across this story, I was actually in class and we were covering breaking news. It was our first class covering breaking news, and then a real breaking news, like a big one, just happened. So, like, we're surprised, we didn't know what was happening. So that's how I came across this story first. I just came to university, saw the encampment, and then our professors were like, we have to reschedule everything for today because we were working on a broadcast to air in the afternoon. So at first, I remember there was a lot of confusion. So we were just trying to understand what happened, like who created the encampment, how long were they planning to stay, how, if they plan to sleep there, how would they receive their food, water, this kind of stuff. These were the questions that we asked ourselves the really first day, which was April 17th. Since then, I mainly covered breaking news, so wrote almost day by day coverage of the ongoing protests, so about the updates about negotiations, about what were the plans basically of the university, of the student protesters, this kind of stuff, until the police came into campus at that point. We also didn't expect the police to come at that point, honestly. I didn't expect them to come on Tuesday night. I was a little bit surprised because the office of the president said they wouldn't have called the police back soon. So I remember I found it out watching Spectrum News, watching the press conference of Eric Adams and the NYPD on Spectrum News in my professor's office, who texted me in that moment. He was like, come to my office right now.
That story you're writing. So now you're writing for City Newsroom.
Yeah.
What is that? Is that a student publication?
It's a class, actually. City Newsroom is one of the classes of the second semester. It actually works as a like a local newsroom. It's 12 of us, and we do the kind of coverage that local newsrooms do. And that's what we did actually in these days during the protests on campus. So writing about the updates about, for instance, so we wrote a piece about Mike Johnson when he came into campus. We also covered a little bit of the protests across New York, in particular at New York University and the New School. So we try to cover as much as possible, but it's impossible basically because in this situation things change so quickly. And we can't stay on campus 24/7. So, for instance, I was not there when Emerson Hall was occupied. Because the particular thing about this coverage and also about news in general is that there are moments when everything is calm, you think nothing will happen. So you're like, okay, I can go home. But then out of the blue, in just 20, 30 minutes, everything happens. And that's what happened between the night of Monday and Tuesday when the student protesters occupied Hamilton Hall. Like until 11 p.m., people didn't really think something would have happened that night. And then around midnight, about 1 a.m., I don't exactly remember, they broke into the building. I remember that I woke up on Tuesday morning. The first thing I did was looking at Instagram, and I watched all the Instagram stories about Hamilton Hall, and I was like, oh my God, what happened?
Yeah, unfortunately, you can't cover a story 24 hours a day. And sometimes you have to, you know, catch up. And, you know, some of that might involve referencing other reporters' work, but then you got to figure out how you're going to make it your story, what's different. And actually, let me ask that. What do you think you were able to provide that may have been different than some of the other news outlets that were there?
I would say that considering that I was inside the university, I guess I had access to news before some major publications. And in particular, talking about when the police came into campus, I took some videos inside the campus and edited, produced the video, and then published it on City News website. There was no press inside. Students of the Columbia Journalism School, the Columbia Spectator, were basically the only outlets inside campus. So I feel like we actually provided an exclusive coverage of what was happening on campus because all the publications were just outside of the gates. Nobody knew what was happening inside. And actually, we also had a hard time to understand what was happening because the police basically created a barrier around Hamilton Hall, so we couldn't get in. We couldn't see what was happening even right outside Hamilton Hall. We just could hear people screaming. I remember at some point I just heard someone as if they were breaking something inside, but we didn't really know what was happening. But I feel like our coverage was, it was completely exclusive. And I remember yesterday, my colleagues and I were just, all the outlets basically started to reach out to us on Twitter, via email, everywhere, because nobody knew what happened inside.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was looking at a video from one of the local TV stations, and they had video of the police cutting chains to get into, you know, to get in classrooms to try to find some of the students that had set up there. I'm not sure if that was news footage or whether that was like body cam footage from the police, but it certainly was from the police perspective. So I'm thinking it was probably the latter. Tell me about your sourcing. I mean, as you said, you're a student on campus, you know, you're covering local news. You can't get much more local than, you know, students involved in a big national story. How did you sort of balance the different sourcing and angles into the story? Or did you sort of, this is the way I want to cover it, and you focus on one thing?
Yeah, it was complicated at first because I had to balance my two identities, which are the one of a reporter and the one of a student. I was basically in the middle. So it was complicated at first. Yeah, also when it comes to the perspective, because of course I have a student perspective, but in that situation, I had to be a reporter, not a student. When it comes to my sources, my main sources were people in the encampment. It was complicated, though, to find sources inside because many people didn't want to talk on the record. Many people didn't want to talk at all because there was also a high level of distrust towards the media. I think that being a student helped, so they were more willing to let me in, maybe talk to me. If I told them that I was a Columbia Journalism School student, they would be like, okay, you can get in, but like, be careful when you take pictures and videos. But they were more willing to collaborate. So yeah, I tried to talk to them to understand what the next steps were. It was difficult, as I already said, not all of them wanted to talk on the record. On my other sources was, of course, the office of the president. So being a student inside of Columbia helped because every day we received communications from the office. So before all the media, we would have updates from the office of the president, Minou Shafik. So we knew before every media what was going to happen, basically. So it gave us a great advantage.
So were you concerned at all at any time about your safety? I mean, if, you know, there were protesters, but there were also police interacting with them. And, well, first of all, what did you do to sort of demark that you were your media as opposed to, you know, because obviously you look like a student and you may be filming something.
Yeah, the Columbia Journalism School provided us with press pass, basically. So it's pretty visible. So it's a pretty visible sign. So because of safety concerns, because they were like, if they see that you're the press, like they will less likely arrest you. Well, if you're just a student with a phone or with a camera, like they may actually arrest you. And even being a student press was difficult because, and I'm talking about the night of the arrest, At some point, we were just pushed inside the Columbia Journalism School, inside the Pulitzer Hall, and we were told not to get out, otherwise we would have been arrested. And in my opinion, like, honestly, it's crazy because we were the only press on campus, and the only press that was there on campus was not allowed basically to do their job in a situation where somebody had to document what was happening.
Yeah. So were you able to resolve that in any way? Were you able to, or you or your professor, able to talk to the administration or talk to the police about that, that you were, you're there as legitimate news reporters covering the event?
Yeah, one of the deans talked with one of the police officers about this issue. And after, I think, an hour or an hour and a half, I think it was around midnight, we were allowed to get out.
Did you file from inside the building, or did you file, did you go back to your room, or go back to the student office? What did you do?
You mean to file the video, to file the story?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was inside the building.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, that's always nice when you get, you're able to work that quickly. Were you just sort of focused on gathering news and facts and maybe video of what you were witnessing for your story, or did you think about, sharing it out on social media? And if so, what were you doing?
Actually, this experience led me to create a Twitter account. I didn't have Twitter before. Yeah, I know that I should have created an account really earlier because that's social media of reporters. My professor told me, Francesca, you need to have Twitter. So I started to use Twitter. This experience helped me to do that. And then I also shared my reporting on social media. Also, when the police came, I just shared live updates on my Instagram stories. So if there was anything news, I would just share it on social media and write some captions. Yeah. And the same on Twitter.
What's nice about that is that actually, in many ways, can help your reporting. There'll be people who see, oh, you're the person who posted that on Instagram. I'll talk to you. Or the things that you can't immediately, like, put online as a story or as a produced video, you can tease to it. You can show people this is going on. We're going to have a fuller report later on. Had you ever covered anything like this before?
No, that's my really first time that I cover protests, that I cover some places. We also have to say that it is pretty unprecedented. Like the NYPD didn't come into Colombia for like 50 years, I think. The last time was in the early 70s, late 60s. It's the first time I cover a story like this. So at first I knew I wanted to cover this story, but of course I was pretty lost, and I also felt there were people who actually could do it is better than me. The first day I was there, but for a couple of days I didn't report the story because I felt I was not entitled to do it. And there were people who were better than me to report it, who maybe have been covering protests for much, much a longer time. But then at the same time, I also realized that reporters come when they come, like people come when they come. When there is news, everybody has to start at some point.
They have to enter the story coverage at some points. Few are going to be there at the beginning. You start out catching up, and then you go on from there. You're a graduate student. What do you think you learned from this experience?
A lot. I feel like in this situation, I really realized what's that like to be a journalist like 24/7 to edit a video at 1 a.m. I feel like, this topic is a really polarizing topic. Of course, I have my own idea about this situation. I'm sure you have your own idea, like everybody does. But at the same time, like we're reporters, we're not activists. So I feel like this experience helped me to realize what's the difference between these two things. And that's also a thing that my professors told me the really first day. Like, you can cover this. Like, if you cover this, we won't publish opinions. We're not interested in opinions. You just have to report. They didn't say it this way, but I could feel they were thinking, like, we don't care about what you think, basically.
Did you include in your reporting any, either in your interviews with anonymous or on the record, any information about the student's perspective as to why they were doing this? Was that part of your reporting?
Yeah, actually, I didn't include it in my reporting, but I talked to people asking them while they're there. Eventually, I didn't publish a story talking about it. Eventually, we went to another direction, which was the one of breaking news, of live updates, so something quicker. So we didn't write a news feature. But I had the opportunity to talk to students, multiple students, trying to understand why they were there. And some of them, they gave me pretty really good answers, some less answers that were less good, but it was really interesting because I could talk to a variety of people who were there for completely different reasons, who decided to join this fight for reasons that are personal, not personal. Yeah.
You know, I mentioned that I watched a video of one of the New York stations, their coverage of, you know, the police going in. And one of the things I kind of immediately recognized was there was no voice for the protesters. There was a lot of like police footage, interviews or press conferences with university officials, with the mayor's office. So the argument behind why they were there, and to be fair, that could have been an aspect of the story because this has been going on for a couple of weeks. Is there anything that you wish you had done differently?
Thank you for asking this question. I would say if I came back, as you said, I would focus more on the voices of students because, of course, we can't cover everything. So we decided to do a day-by-day coverage. In that case, it's breaking news. And when it comes to breaking news, unfortunately, many voices are erased. So if I started again, I would tell maybe I would focus less on breaking news and more on who are these students, what are they, what are they doing? I don't know, maybe writing a series of profiles or maybe writing a news feature about them, about what they're there, about their history, because there are some of them who have really interesting points of view, interesting things to say. So I think, yeah, I would have done this. I regret I didn't do it, honestly. I
Well,
regretted
yeah, and
it.
you know, and I brought up this subject, and it was not meant as necessarily a criticism of your
No, I
work, but
know, I
just
know.
more as you're covering, especially in breaking news, you're covering minute by minute, and so you can't always step back and get a larger picture. Is there not going to be an opportunity for you to write maybe a like a quote unquote second day story, a feature or something a little bit more about this?
I won't exclude this opportunity because I may consider to write maybe in the next few days because it doesn't, I feel like it doesn't really need to be timely. We can just, even though we publish it in a few days or in a week, I feel like if you wrote something like a profile from the encampment, it will be still timely in a week or two. So I'm not excluding this opportunity. Actually, you gave me some inspiration to do it, if I have to be honest. Yeah, I feel like I will pitch this story to my professor soon.
Well, you know, what you were saying reminded me what you were saying about being identified as press. You were very, very wisely said that, you know, being identified as press would likely or you know, maybe help you in some circumstances of not being arrested or seen as a student. But I remember some of the protests on Inauguration Day in Washington, D.C. I live in the D.C. area. You know, I interviewed a couple of reporters who were on the scene who got swept up with protesters. And that does happen. Again, that's something that you don't expect, and sometimes you can't really necessarily plan for it. It's just something that happens. So you're an Italian graduate student from multimedia student. Tell me about your past. What got you interested in journalism?
It's a really big question. My interest in journalism started late in high school. I was 17 or 18. I can't recall a moment when I started to be interested in journalism. It just happened, I guess. In Italy, there is not an undergraduate program in journalism at the university. So eventually I studied in humanities. But in the meantime, I wrote from some student magazines. I worked for a local newspaper of my town. I'm from Rome. Not exactly Rome, I live near in the surroundings. I was a contributor to this local newspaper. I published some pieces for online newspapers. So I tried to have as more opportunities as possible with the means that I had at the time. Yeah, I studied humanities, and then outside of the university, I also started studying Arabic because I'm really interested in the MENA region, so North Africa and the Middle East. And eventually in the future, I would like to report there. But I knew I wanted to be a journalist, so I wanted to get a master's degree in journalism. So I applied for multiple universities in Europe and the United States. And I was accepted at Columbia, and I was like, I have to go there.
Is there any sense, I don't know how much reporting you've done outside of what we've been talking about. Is there any sense of, it's different covering a story in the United States than it would be in Italy or Europe?
I think, yeah, it's a little bit different. I feel like it depends also on the different approach to reporting, because in Europe, I would say that newspapers in Western Europe are more likely to have a political influence, I would say. So there are left-wing newspapers or right-wing newspapers. It's accepted in Europe. Well, in the US is less accepted, of course, because news have to be, I wouldn't say unbiased, but like they shouldn't be influenced by these factors. That's the main difference between my experience in Europe and my experience here in the US. And also a difference when approaching sources. I don't know, like I can calling people on a Sunday and it's not a big issue. I would never call a person on a Sunday in Italy, honestly. That's also a thing that I noticed here, like people pick up the phone like 24/7 sometimes, and that's a thing that surprised me a little bit at first.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, obviously, from a journalist standpoint, you want to be able to get information wherever you can. But I know culturally, I don't know whether if we're any more advanced because of that, or maybe we should all just take a break on Sunday. I get the impression that this has been a positive experience for you. Do you see this as, sort of reaffirming what your decision that you wanted to pursue a path in journalism?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for talking on the podcast. This has been really fascinating. I'm really pleased to hear that it was a positive experience for you and that you learned a lot, and I wish you luck on your career.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Michael.
You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the people who report the news. You can find out more about us and download past episodes at itsalljournalism.com. While you're visiting our website, sign up for the It's All Journalism newsletter. To make sure you don't miss an episode of It's All Journalism, you can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Google Play, Amazon, and pretty much anywhere good podcasts are found. If you'd like to help us grow our podcast, like and share our episodes on social media. Look for us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. It takes a lot of people to create an episode of It's All Journalism. Nicola Grisco is our audio producer. Amber Healy writes our web content. Amelia Brust is our booking manager. Steph Thomas manages our social media. Nick Dupre composed our theme music. Carolyn Bilewski designed our logo. And I'm your host, Michael O'Connell. Thanks for listening.